Welcome to the Natural Allergy Treatment Podcast. So it's been a while since we've posted any episodes, and I have a new naturopath joining me from New Zealand named Jenny. So Jenny's a naturopath and a nutritionist, and she's been working with us since 2004, performing PAT treatments in both our Sydney clinics and Auckland clinics. And she's now a trainer and mentor for our practitioners around Australia and New Zealand. So today we'll be talking all about MSG. So we'll start off with a few quick introductory questions just to give our listeners a taster of what we'll be talking about today. So to start us off, Jenny, what is MSG?
So MSG stands for monosodium sodium glutamate, and it is used as a flavour enhancer in foods.
Okay, and what are the main foods that contain MSG?
It is in almost all processed foods that you will find in your cupboard and in your supermarkets.
And does MSG naturally occur in any foods?
No, but glutamates do.
Okay, and is MSG bad for us?
We'll cover some studies looking into the effects of MSG further down into the podcast.
Okay, and how do I know if I'm reacting to MSG?
Common symptoms include headaches, rashes, and digestive symptoms, but there are many other symptoms to look out for.
All right, and why do we crave MSG?
Because it activates the pleasure centers in our brain. So the more that you eat it, the more that you want to eat more of it.
Yep.
And also because it increases the flavor of things, it makes other foods taste blander, and so you want more of that strong taste.
Yep. All right. So would you mind starting us off by telling us a bit more about the origin of MSG?
Sure. It is actually quite interesting. So MSG stands for monosodium glutamate, and it was originally isolated from kombu seaweed by a Japanese chemistry professor named Kinkai Ikea from 1907. So, I mean, that was a really, really long time ago. And he was really fortunate. He came from a well-to-do family, and the father was really progressive. And so he spoke. He learned to speak English when he was young, and he was encouraged to think. And he had a very inquiring mind. And so he was in the end decided on chemistry. But he didn't just study in Japan. He went to other parts of Europe as well. And when he was in Germany, he tried certain foods for the first time, which were tomatoes, asparagus, meat, and cheese, which we now know are really high in glutamates. And this is the first time that he tasted or sensed that there was another taste present in the foods aside from the traditional salt, sweet, sour, and bitter. And so when he returned home, he was thinking about this, and his wife brought home a bundle of kelp, which is what they call kombu, and she was making dashi soup, which is the Japanese sort of broth that's a staple in all the homes. And he tasted the kelp, and he noticed that same taste that he had discovered with the tomatoes and the other food that he had tried in Germany. And so from that, he was really confident that there actually was another taste. So he started carrying out experiments on the kelp aimed at extracting that flavor from it. And it was by this method that he discovered that it was the glutamic acid or glutamate that was the central element of this taste, which he then coined umami. And so during that process, he thought that this would be a good thing to get out into the world. So he worked a way of commercializing it. So he went through lots of different salts to combine the glutamate with, and in the end he ended up with the sodium because it increased this flavor as well as being the most easily absorbed in water. So the interesting thing about MSG is that it's actually completely tasteless and odorless by itself. It's only when it's added to foods that it brings out this savory, meaty mouthfeel that adds depth and texture to foods. So he recognized this new taste, and so he termed it umami, which means delicious in Japanese. And it's now recognized as the fifth taste. And so this increase or this umami happens because when our mouth hits the food, the saliva breaks apart the sodium and the glutamate components, which activates this umami taste receptors on the tongue. So he was actually really ahead of his time, yeah, because it wasn't until 2002 the scientist identified the umami taste receptors on the tongue. So mm-hmm. he knew or had realized it way yeah. back in 1907. And what's interesting is that the further research that they've now done is that it's there isn't just umami taste receptors on the tongue, but it's also found in the gut. So they're really looking into how umami plays a part in digestion
yep.
as well as just a taste sensation.
Okay, so there were actually naturally occurring glutamates in foods prior to the production of MSG.
Yeah, yep. definitely. Okay. So the taste and palatability of foods is part of our human evolution. Like if you think about the taste sweet, when the hunter-gatherers were trying to get food, like for them it was feast or famine. Yep. So they really needed to have something that they knew would give them quick calories. Yep. And so when they tasted something sweet, they knew that that was going to give them that extra energy yep. that they needed. It also, berries mostly, if they're sweet, are not poisonous. Mm. So that's kind of why we're genetically geared to sort of feel like sweet is safe
yep.
because it's so in the same sense, even though umami has been coined by the professor, it's an ancient taste impression that has been dated back since the 5th century BC, where garum, which is a fermented fish sauce, was used throughout Rome and the ancient world. Mm. So it's been around forever. It's just that he created the name for it. And so the interesting thing about glutamate is within food, it's either attached to other amino acids in the form of a protein, so then it's called bound glutamate, or it's free. And so the more free glutamate there is, the more umami flavor the food will have. So therefore, the more ripe a fruit or vegetable is, the more free glutamate it will have. Also, curing or fermenting foods increases the food's free glutamate as the proteins are broken down and release the amino acids. And so the interesting thing about fermented foods is they contain a lot of the free unattached protein glutamate, because the fermenting process has basically allowed it to break down, and therefore it's absorbed almost immediately.
A lot quicker. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what are some foods that are typically high in glutamates?
Yeah. So as I was saying, seaweed and then meat, especially if it's aged, fish, seafood, fermented sauces, aged cheeses, and some fruits and vegetables and nuts. And the interesting thing about foods is some combinations will create a stronger lasting umami flavor sensation on our tongue. And this happens when the food has one of two nucleotides, inositate or gluconate, which the glutamate is able to stick to with its receptor for a longer time. So this is used in dishes all the time. So for example, in carrots and onions are high in glutamate, and when combined with beef, which is high in inositate, it will increase the umaminess of it, which is why it's often in beef stews and
other things. A classic combination. Yeah, totally.
And the same goes for bonito fish, which contains inositate, and kombu seaweed, which is high in glutamate. So that's why that combines so well in stocks to increase the umami flavor. So the amazing thing about it in its natural form is that it increases a depth and a flavor to our meals, and it has this ability to draw out the other flavors of the ingredients in a dish. And so it increases its palatability by balancing and intensifying those different flavors. So you can see why chefs love it.
I mean, definitely.
It really does do a lot of amazing things.
Yeah. So if it occurs naturally in foods, is there a difference between umami and MSG?
Definitely. So MSG does target the same receptors in our body, but because it is made synthetically, it affects us in really different ways. So the easiest example to explain would be the difference between refined sugar and complex carbohydrates. So we all know that refined sugar has no nutrients or fiber to slow the absorption in our body. Mm. So therefore it goes straight into the bloodstream in one big hit, mm-hmm. and causes chaos to our blood sugar regulation and organs. Mm-hmm. So MSG is similar to this in our body. It's made up completely of those free glutamates. Mm. And because it is not bound to any of the proteins, normal digestion doesn't happen, as there are no peptides to slow it down, which means that it is absorbed rapidly, mm. which can raise blood levels of glutamates 8 to 10 times wow. higher than is what is naturally found in foods. And this can cause toxicity mm. for some people because it's such a big dump yeah. into the body.
Mm-hmm.
And so because the glutamates that occurred naturally, they're entwined with different food chemicals mm. and proteins or fiber, it helps the body to regulate it and process it. So your body can control how much mm. is absorbed. And then the excess glutamate is passed off as waste and not stored in your body. But it's different with the MSG. And another difference is the type of glutaminic acid that is produced. Because MSG is made in a manufacturing plant, it breaks it down and makes it become free of protein by various processes called hydrolyzed, autolyzed, modified, or it's fermented with strong chemicals like acids, bacteria, or enzymes. And then it is refined into a white crystalline powder that changes the glutamate structure from L-glutamic acid to D-glutamic, which is not found naturally in any plants or animals, which means that it's harder for our body to recognize it. Mm-hmm. And also, because MSG is powdered, it is in much, much higher concentrations
yeah.
than you would be getting from natural sources.
Yeah. Okay. So MSG can make flavorless, poor quality processed foods taste good. So is that why it's still a backbone of the processed and fast food industry?
Definitely. Mm-hmm. It's another interesting story, because initially when it was commercialized, it was used mainly in Asian countries, but it came to the attention of Americans through World War II because U.S. Army officers noticed that the American soldiers liked the Japanese ration packs way better than their own. And so they started researching into it, and they found that they had included MSG into the rations.
Wow.
So they improved the palatability of basically an bland. Otherwise really bland, tasteless food. You can literally sprinkle MSG onto cardboard and it'll taste good.
Oh, it's
yeah. So after war, there was a period of modernization that created plastic in cans that could store food for longer. And at the same time, supermarkets and processed foods kind of boomed. Mm. There was this huge era of industrialization.
Yep.
And so foods became more convenient and storable, but they weren't as tasty as fresh foods. And so they were like, this is it, MSG.
Yep.
So they just included it into all of these products. Like, it's been around forever.
Yep.
And also during this time, it was the beginning of fast food chains.
Yeah.
And so they also utilized MSG. Mm-hmm. And so fast forward 100 years, and MSG is firmly embedded in our food industry, where it's had some polarizing opinions of its safety and ability to cause negative side effects and sensitivities in people. So there is a lot of research on both sides, but I would mention that the ones that are claiming it's safe have been conducted by the food industry.
Yeah.
So they have a vested interest to prove its safety.
Okay, so what has the research found exactly?
So science has found that MSG can affect the brain because it can cross the blood-brain barrier, which is a protective mechanism in the brain that controls what chemicals can go into the brain. So they are a part of chemicals that are called excitotoxins, and they excite the brain cells, and they can cause them to exhaust themselves or die. Mm. So what this does is alter the chemistry of the brain, and that can cause symptoms such as mood swings, headaches, and an inability to concentrate. And so the growing brains of children are way more vulnerable to these excitotoxins than adults. And so children often have more reactions.
Bigger
than
reactions,
others.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so Russell Blaylock, he's the author of a book called Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills. And he says that a child's brain is four times more sensitive to excitotoxins than an adult brain. And so it also reaches a peak, MSG reaches a peak concentration about 3 to 4 hours after ingesting it. And they can remain high for 24 hours after eating it.
Jeez.
And it's not just children. I mean, you might have known or seen at a party, some children can just completely lose it. Well, potentially it is because they've had all of this MSG in their brain. But it is also not just children. It can be detrimental to people who've had a brain injury or a genetic predisposition to brain disease.
Okay. And what about people who are sensitive to MSG or glutamates?
Yeah, so there are quite a few people out there that have a sensitivity or intolerance to it, and usually they'll react within 48 hours of ingesting it, even small amounts. But because it's 48 hours, it can make it difficult to trace back the food source that caused the reaction. And so these side effects can be headaches, hives, canker sores, runny nose, insomnia, seizures, mood swings, panic attacks, heart palpitations, other heart irregularities.
Yeah, the list goes on.
Nausea. Mm. There's asthma attacks is a really big one, and migraines, and also restless leg syndrome. So the problem with people who are sensitive to it, like all sensitivities, there's a loading effect that happens in your body. And then once your body reaches a threshold of what it can tolerate, the symptoms will occur. So this loading effect can be different every time, depending on what you've eaten in the last 4 days or how strong your immune system is at the time or where your stress levels are at. So sometimes it can be really hard to figure out what it is because all of these things are contributing to it.
And also, just on a side note, if there's multiple reactions going on as well, that can make it even harder to pinpoint what's caused it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And so also, as well as adverse reaction, they have been linked, MSG has been linked to many health conditions, including weight gain, hormonal imbalances, brain damage, and obesity. Because MSG is addictive and it activates the pleasure centers of the brain, it makes people want to crave and overeat these particular products. So the more that you eat them, the more everything else just tastes a bit bland. So and the other thing often about MSG is that the foods are highly processed, and so diets can become poorer in nutrients and higher in carbohydrates, which can lead to obesity.
It takes the focus away from whole foods to processed foods.
And even rat researchers, they give MSG to rats to make them obese for their experiments. I mean, it's crazy. I know.
Wow.
So the other part of people that have the potential to react to glutamates is people who are in adrenal fatigue or that fight or flight mode. Because they have an overreactive nervous system, and the body produces inflammation, and inflammation actually leads to excess glutamate production in our bodies. So when we already have excess glutamate, eating these foods results in further for this nervous system to become overreactive.
Wow. Okay. So there's a really wide range of symptoms, basically, that you can be looking for. So when it comes to looking out for MSG in the foods we're eating, what numbers should we be looking for on food packaging?
This is interesting too. Well, I mean, as you probably can tell, I find all of this really interesting, but it can be hard to trace back a food source that caused a reaction because it's not just the MSG additive numbers 620 to 625 that contain MSG. There was a doctor who in 1968 wrote a letter into a medical journal stating that certain physical symptoms could be caused by eating MSG. And this actually created a really huge shift in its popularity. And consumers didn't want to buy products or go to restaurants that used it. So the processed food producers had to work out a way to make new additive numbers that are not technically MSG. That they can still get the effects, but they keep their customers. So along with the numbers 620 to 625, there's also these new three flavor enhancers called ribonucleotides. And their numbers are 627, 631, and 635. And these boost the flavor enhancing effect of MSG up to 15 times.
Geez, wow.
I know, it's crazy. Yeah. So unfortunately, they also boost the adverse reactions to MSG as well. And they have a very specific symptom that they cause, which is very itchy rashes. So they've been coined ribo rashes, and they can be anywhere all over the body. And they look red and raised, and they're super itchy. And so because they're not technically MSG, companies can say no added MSG
on their labels.
Or even, or no MSG on the packaging. In fact, one of the biggest fast food chains in the world doesn't use MSG, but in over 10 of their staple products, they use the numbers 627 and 631.
It's very sneaky. And
it's very sneaky. Mm. But and even Kentucky Fried Chicken, you know, their secret herbs and spices, they have admitted that MSG is part of that. Wow. Yeah. So that's another big chain, but they've said that they definitely, they're not as sneaky.
Okay. At least they've admitted it.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but also along with these additive numbers, there's also another set of chemicals, and these are the ones that trip people up because, you know, you can look for numbers, but now they use MSG and they call it processed free glutamates. Mm. And you might have noticed on the backs of food, autolyzed plant protein, processed plant protein flavors, maltodextrin, citric acid, yeast extract. There's so many different names.
Yeah.
And I think, Jess, will we be giving them a list of things?
Well, an example that I had at the supermarket the other day, I was buying canned tomatoes and I was just investigating, looking at the back, and 9 out of 10 of them had citric acid in it. And it was only once I picked the organic can, that's the only one that didn't. But that's not always guaranteed either, is it, picking organic?
No.
It's just,
because we'll get to that part too.
Yeah.
So, you know, the only exception for most snacks would be plain salted chips. They definitely don't have them. Mm-hmm. Some plain corn chips and some plain rice crackers. But do you notice the word plain?
Yeah.
No MSG and it equals plain taste. I mean, that's just the way it is. And so there's all of that sneakiness of putting them in. But also in New Zealand and Australia, if an ingredient forms less than 5% of a product, an additive in that ingredient doesn't have to be listed.
That's just wild to me. It's crazy.
So even though flavor enhancers are banned in infant foods in Australia and New Zealand and America, because they know that it causes damage to babies, you know, brain and their nervous system, which is good, but it doesn't take into consideration if it gets passed via the baby via breast milk, or if a child under 1 year of age is eating foods for older children.
Yeah, sometimes you can't help these things,
And so what they found is that MSG has been shown to cause lesions in the brain, especially in children, which can cause cognitive, and emotional abnormalities, goodness me. So studies show that rats that have been fed MSG since birth couldn't escape mazes or discriminate between the stimuli as well as non-MSG fed rats.
Jeez.
So basically what it's saying is that the implications of children that have had a high diet of MSG, it could affect their cognitive skill and cause learning difficulties. And there is a lot of interest in this and the rise of ADHD in children.
And the link there.
If there's a connection.
Yeah. Okay. So just to sum things up, what advice would you give to someone who suspects they may be reacting to MSG or glutamates?
So just because you don't see that original number of 621 on your packaged foods, if you dig a little deeper into the ingredient list, you're pretty much certain that you're going to find some form of it in there. So for some people, there's no noticeable effect when they consume it, but for others, it can cause a range of symptoms from irrational meltdowns in toddlers to severe heart palpitations in others. So if you've experienced some physical and emotional symptoms, but you just can't figure out what it's from, just open up your pantry cupboard and read the backs of your favorite snacks, and that answer may actually just be there for you. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And the other option, we perform a natural allergy treatment called positive association technique. So this is performed by qualified naturopaths. We have clinics around Australia and in Auckland, New Zealand, and we use a form of muscle testing or kinesiology. And this is a non-invasive way to test through a range of reactions to certain foods or food chemicals like glutamates and food additives like MSG. So once we've got a better idea of what you may be reacting to, we do a treatment which is based on stimulating acupressure points down the back to help retrain your body to no longer have the same reaction to that substance and give some symptomatic relief. So if you're interested in looking into this further, you can go to our website, which is naturalallergytreatment.com.au. We're also on Instagram on natural.allergy.treatment. And last of all, we also do have through our website a link where we can send you a full food list of the glutamates. So that's something you can inquire through our website too. So I guess we'll wrap it up there, Jenny. Thanks so much for answering our questions.
Oh, you're welcome.
No worries. Thanks. Speak to you soon.
Thank you.